Hi, this is Rebecca Morta, founder and CEO of Loan Design Club, and welcome to our podcast, LDC Designer Stories, where we take you behind the scenes and into the worlds of our under-the-radar, cutting-edge, and conscious independent brands. As this is episode number one, we want to set the tone. And what better way to do this than starting with our very own story? So, I am kicking off our podcast by taking you deeper into our world, our story, our journey, mission, and values. And to do this, I am joined by two of LDC's incredible leaders, our COO, Alice McAnulty, and Head of Digital, Catherine Oliva. Both are in the room with me now. Alongside sharing our own story, we will also be reflecting on the year that was so unexpected, 2020. The past 7 months of ups and downs, its challenges, opportunities, as well as our hopes and expectations for the future. Whilst 2020 was not the year we had planned, our expansion further into Europe and Asia cut short, our physical activities accounting for about 80 to 90% of our business pre-COVID now paused, and no option but to do what we had anticipated would take about 3 to 5 years, digitize the entire business. It's been a year of ups and downs, but we are optimistic about the future. We've now pivoted to focus on digital selling via live stream, tech-enabled window shops, and deepening how we tell stories and sharing our products online, all of which we will delve into in this podcast. Catherine, Alice, I am so excited to kick off our podcast like this with the three of us.
Thrilled.
Hello. Very excited.
Great. I feel like there's so much to talk about, share, and discuss. But before we get stuck in, let's talk a little bit about the LDC story. So to do this, I'd love to start with your stories. Let's talk about where the three of us first met, of course, at different times. But let's talk a little bit about those. Catherine, you've kind of been with us since right at the beginning in a kind of on-off way. Alice, you fell into our laps last September, and it's been heaven since. Let's talk about those first moments. Did you guys know what you were getting into in those first interviews or conversations that we had?
No.
I feel like I should have known because I first met you in the store.
Yeah.
But I didn't know.
Yeah, it was like back in November, right? It was right at the beginning, like November 2018 when you came into the pop-up we had in Charing Cross, right?
Yes, exactly. It was November 2018. I had just moved like 3 months earlier to London from New York. And I was just kind of figuring out what I was going to do career-wise here in London. And yeah, it was actually my partner who was found LDC's pop-up on Eventbrite and was like, hey, this looks cool. I think you should go see this and check them out. It seems like I'd always worked in fashion retail and startups and he was just like, oh, it seems like right up your street. So I went and met you. And
I actually didn't know I obviously knew like a bit of it, but I didn't know that Harry had,
he's the one, who found, LDC on Eventbrite. So owe it all to him.
Yeah. And then we had like a back and forth for a while because you like put your email down and I couldn't find it. And you mentioned that you were doing like e-com and I was like, oh my God. And then like by chance, you like replied to a mailer when we said we were hiring. And then I guess the rest is history.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I know that was quite funny. We were trying to find each other in different ways on email. And then it was total serendipity.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny that both of us started our LDC journeys through Eventbrite. That's 100% how I found LDC too. I was living Switzerland and nothing ever happens in Switzerland, but I was going to London for 2 weeks in April 2019 and I was so excited and it was around Fashion Revolution. So I was on Eventbrite signing up to every possible sustainable fashion thing that was happening. And one of those was the LDC store on Baker Street. So I went and I met some of the team and I was like, my gosh, I want to work here. And then I bought a Sarah and Sorrentino bikini. Still have it.
Yes.
My first ever LDC purchase. And I remember being so thrilled with the whole experience because I'd just bought some Pala sunglasses, and I got to meet John in the LDC store.
Yeah.
Annoyingly, I hadn't bought them from LDC, but it was still great. And I since only buy them from LDC. I remember just feeling like that was such a special moment for me. But at the time, I wasn't living in London, but kept in touch with one of the LDC team. And then when I moved back in August, September, I applied and met Rebecca. And it all happened very quickly. I think it happened within like 24 hours.
It did. And I feel like your first, like joining us, you were thrown right into like a crazy Fashion Week store in September.
A great store, though. Gosh, I thought I would never feel exhaustion like that again, but that's a continuous feeling. But it was a great store. Gosh, a memory of pre-COVID life, but wow, it was a good one.
It was. And so much has changed since then, which we'll get onto in a bit. But I feel like we should be sponsored by Eventbrite because I owe them a lot. Absolutely. Or maybe I need to like sponsor them or something because I feel like I owe Eventbrite a lot now. What was it about Lone Sign Club? In your words, why did you join us? I mean, obviously I know why I'm here and what I was trying to do. I had my own women's wear brand. I was working for people like Lady Gaga and Charlie XCX and some cool people in the industry like Alexander Wang, and then went on to set up my own brand, which led me then to realize that wholesale and traditional retail was changing. And you started using pop-up stores as a way to go direct to consumer and to start meeting customers and building those relationships, which quickly we realized was a totally different experience than something you can get online or from the high street. But what was it? Because you guys came from a different route. What was it that you loved when you went into those stores?
I was interested before I even got to the store, to be honest. I had become so passionate about sustainable fashion and having worked for a smaller brand in Australia and sort of seen how amazing it was to be able to support an independent and have that transparency over what they do. I thought, kind of knew that that was where I wanted to work in. So I guess it was a mixture of me looking for place, spending a bit more time looking for an industry that I actually wanted to work in. And then from a selfish or more, I suppose, commercial perspective, I was actually looking for somewhere where I could buy things that I felt confident buying.
You've got quite an interesting system. I mean, we've all got our sustainability stories, right? But I think one of the things that I loved was like meeting you, especially was you've got a really interesting sustainability story. And I think you it dates back to university, if I'm correct for you, which was a big tipping point. And then since then, you've worked at places like the Ethical Fashion Forum. Correct me if I'm wrong, but tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, exactly like you said, it all sort of started for me at London College of Fashion. I've always been interested in the industry, and I would say I was raised in a fairly sustainable fashion, or at least conscious of the environment. It all changed at LCF basically overnight. I mean, I pretty much went vegan overnight. Basically stopped shopping until I could feel confident shopping again. And after that sort of was, I guess, hell bent on only working places that I respected and that I felt were trying to make a difference in the world. And that was, that brand in Australia, but it was also, like you said, the Ethical Fashion Initiative. I think there's a lot, I feel fairly confident with my decisions now, but I think there's more than people realize if you are really intent on shopping sustainably or making that your life or your livelihood. It's not an easy overnight thing. It's taken me years to, feel confident shopping when and where I do. And I think, something that LDC was doing and, hopefully is doing more and more is how we communicate that. And how we support our brands and share their stories in a way that, yes, we want people to shop and these are incredible products, but there's more to it than that. And hopefully customers and consumers can have that confidence that I've built up when it comes to their shopping.
And what about you, Catherine? What's your sustainability story?
Ooh, I feel like it's been a journey. I mean, it wasn't as overnight as that. For me, it's been a long journey of realization since I was young. For me, it's, you know, I think for most of my life, it was more focused on what I ate, you know, recycling, light, you know, energy, like, you know, turning off light, like those kinds of things. And then it transformed into sustainable fashion and consumerism and what I bought later on in life. I'd say once I graduated and then I was in New York working in the fashion industry, that's when I realized, particularly working in the fashion industry there, how different my viewpoints were from the mass luxury fashion industry and the mass brands out there. And it slowly evolved, I think, bit by bit, the more I learned. You know, first it's about, you know, you're looking at the fabrics, and then you're talking about, okay, so, you know, I think I'm only going to buy, you know, I don't know, try and focus on not buying, only buying natural fabrics. And then you look at how it's made. There's so many different facets to what makes a sustainable and ethical brand. It's not just simple. So I think, and I've definitely taken steps in my sustainable journey, the more and more I've learned. And that's also reflected in my career and what I prioritize and who I looked at. I think I learned quite quickly working in the fashion industry in New York that my heart just wouldn't be in it if I was working for some of these mass brands that, to be honest, didn't quite care at all. And it just didn't sit well with me. And so that's been a priority for me ever since. I think that was like 6 years ago when I started working for startups and brands that really put sustainability and ethical production and diversity and everything that goes into being an ethical, sustainable business at the forefront. Because, you know, yeah, it aligns with my passions. And I don't think I could, particularly in the fashion industry that's so focused on the consumerism and I think is shifting so quickly. Yeah, I couldn't work for a company that didn't.
Definitely.
I think that's really interesting. And it's, I mean, it's a huge focus for us and also a really good segue into the past 7 months, you know, where I think we can all agree there was movement in sustainability and ethics and social responsibility pre-COVID, but during these past 7 months, that acceleration of education, awareness, conversation, you know, has been incredible. You know, pre-COVID to now, what have you guys noticed the most about this kind of acceleration in sustainability? Do you think it's been super positive? Do you think there's still a lot more, a long way to go? Or do you think actually some serious strides have been made and we're moving from trend to, you know, sustainability actually being cemented part of our lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's given people some time to actually reflect. And from what I've seen anyway, particularly some of the bigger companies have been forced to. They've been forced to sort of take a step back and reassess how they operate their businesses. I think, you know, the fact that people's physical retail businesses, for example, have been affected means they've had more time to put into sustainability initiatives as well as digital ones. I think it has accelerated. I think it's one of those tricky things that awareness has definitely grown from where I'm standing anyway. And I think we now have a far more engaged society. And I would, you know, looking at the stats, I'm gonna forget any specifics, but the percentage of people who now say they would shop local, independent, ethical has significantly increased. The only downside, I suppose, of the reason for this being a pandemic is that other sustainability areas have suffered. You know, reusables being refused because they might pass on illness, or things being wrapped in a certain way so that it's more safe, which is fine and absolutely, you know, health and safety is important. But I think there's been a little bit of a imbalance in awareness versus the actual actions And I would hope that that's something that enough work has been put in now from an awareness and a strategy perspective, that when we come out of this and we are safer, and people's health is less at risk, some of these actions will actually be put into place, and some of that sort of reusable packaging will come back into play. But yeah, mm-hmm. that's sort of like one on the other side.
Yeah. And on this, on the note of kind of, you know, you're speaking a lot about challenges and opportunities, which, you know, which I love. And I think that's definitely, this has been a very tough year, but at the same time, it has presented so many opportunities. And I think for us, especially, it's really put us at the forefront of this retail revolution and renaissance, which is great. I mean, expanding on challenges and opportunities, what do you think we've seen across these past 7 months? In terms of challenges and opportunities for the small brands and for these conscious consumers that we work so closely with?
I mean, particularly across digital, it's just been a huge acceleration in emphasis, because that was our lifeline. You know, when everyone was in their homes, that's how we stayed connected. It's how we were connected to the outside world. So I think it really put that into perspective for us and a lot of other small businesses who always knew digital was a part of our, you know, an important part of our businesses. But when that's suddenly all you have and that's your connection to your community, it really puts emphasis on it. And it means that I think there's something like, you know, what typically the change that would typically happen in certain parts of the industry, such as digital, you know, people who, you know, projections that were 3 years out have all of a sudden had to happen in 6 months because everything else has been put on hold. So all these projects that we're putting in, you know, next year are all of a sudden happening now. And I know even talking to other people in the industry, there's all these things that have been around for a while, such as VR, AR, yeah. What else? We were talking to another one the other day, all those different things where they're all of a sudden having a heyday. And like live, all these different live chat features, all these different like technology, and all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, did you just happen? Like, you must be just, you're popping up because you're taking advantage of the digital renaissance during COVID, right? And they're like, no, we've actually been around for 3 years. No one just, you know, paid attention until it was absolutely vital and necessary. Like, we've been screaming about it. So I think that's definitely been a huge change. And I think digital also can be quite, there's definitely a more advanced and less advanced technology, but it also I think can be democratizing in a way. Because for example, like, you know, there's different tools out there, but at the same time, yeah. Instagram is Instagram, and a small brand versus a big brand, I mean, they have different tools at their disposal, but the same end of the day, it's the same platform. And same with the website. So I think hopefully, you know, as far as us and small businesses and their small brands we can work with, it's been something they've been able to take advantage of in that perspective.
Do you think they have? I mean, I feel like I'm, you know, from the conversations I've had with some of our brands, you know, I think it has been, there's a couple of things I've noticed that I think are really incredible. One is that people are really trying to support these smaller independent brands, which for us has been fantastic. And Alice, I know you probably have a lot to say on this, that, you know, customers really getting behind their local economies and wanting to support these smaller businesses, because there's that fear that if they don't, they won't last. And these little local high streets and neighborhoods that I think we've all realized maybe we've taken for granted a lot in the past are so precious to us and, to where we live and to how we interact with them, which is really special to see. And on the other side, it's been really amazing to see, or from the conversations I had with a lot of our brands, a lot of them that really struggled in the beginning saw really amazing increases in their e-com sales. And all this talk of department stores are on the way out and marketplaces are the future. And I think there's so much opportunity and excitement around this.
Definitely. Some of the brands definitely, like you said, some of the brands I've spoken to had some of their best sales months when the pandemic hit, because there really was this cry to support independence, which is so important. And I think, you know, from our perspective, we've had the opportunity to take on more physical spaces than ever before. And with that comes greater exposure for ourselves, but also for the independent brands that we work with and support. And I think that visibility has been very important in getting that message out there. And like you said, exploring different areas that really embrace that sort of independent local high street has been an interesting turn of events. And, you know, when you look at the areas that have been busy during the pandemic, it's not the main shopping streets all the time. It's, you know, villages almost, or on the outskirts of London, where that sort of community mindset really kicked in, and where, you know, those shops had queues outside them because people wanted to support their local businesses, whether it was retail, food, whatever it was. It's been such an amazing opportunity to get that visibility. You know, I spoke to one of our designers and she said that every Friday during the pandemic, they were, even when restaurants were closed, they were getting takeaway pizza from this one local place that they worked with, that they lived near, because they didn't want them to go out of business. And because they were such a treasure in the community, but they knew they were struggling. So I think everyone doing those sort of little random acts of kindness has really shed a light on what potentially the future of retail might look like.
Definitely. I mean, we were in, you know, even when we first came out of lockdown in, when was that, June? And we went into city center. I mean, all this summer it was dead. And that's because the emphasis has, I mean, because everyone's been at home, the emphasis has been on local, right? And even, I mean, more dramatic, but you've seen, you know, this whole summer, like cottagecore was trending and everyone was like dreaming this country life because we're all trapped at home. So of course everyone wants a garden and space. But I think that, you know, it again puts the emphasis on what close proximity, what's around you, where you live. Yeah, which has been a really interesting.
And I thought, you know, we've heard a little bit about digital, you know, and you've had a mammoth few months. What about physical, Alice? Because I remember speaking to you in January and you had this lovely little plan of exactly how all the pop-ups were going to run and all the locations. And I remember you did like a little dance because you were so happy that you'd like nailed it. And then COVID hit.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, talk about taking one of the happiest days of my life and just flipping it. Yeah, I mean, we started strong this year. We had locations lined up February, March, April, May, June. Everything was so on track. And not just one pop-up store in some of those months, two. we had, you know, we were all set to really just explode in London, but also in the second half of the year, boy, what a plan we had for UK and also Europe, which, you know, all had to take a back seat. But I think in some ways, you know, we have made the best of what was a very difficult situation for physical retail. Yes, we had one of our best pop-ups to date in March, just before we got to close, which was a really good way to go out.
That was one of our best, and that was literally as we went into lockdown. I mean, that's just madness. Oh my gosh,
wasn't lockdown like the day after closing?
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. Yeah, we just made it. it was brilliant. And we only sort of got affected on the last couple of days. So really, that was a good way to go out. It was just that we then had to put on pause April, May, June. But we did, I think we innovated and we still managed to come out in a way that, you know, got LDC out there and got brands out there. with our whole phygital shop window innovation. And, you know, by the end of June, we had a window in Covent Garden, a window in Chelsea, 4 windows in Mayfair. And, you know, never before have we had that many spaces. You know, I think the most we've ever had at once pre-COVID was 3. To see us suddenly have 6 when retail couldn't even be open was fantastic. And it meant that we, you know, the attention that we were able to attract for ourselves and for our brands was fantastic. With our, you know, QR code safe shopping windows, it was innovative and it was creative. And the windows looked incredible and they were spread out across London. And I think being able to bounce back like that and not wait until retail could reopen properly was brilliant, because that meant that we were ahead of the game and it meant we had locations ready for when retail could reopen. And since then, I mean, we were able to get back to some kind of normality in August. And luckily for us, I mean, luckily, I say luckily after October and November were also closed. But luckily for us, we've just had a great 2-week December pop-up store, and managed to finish the year on what I would consider a significant high, and, you know, get our brands that extra exposure and that extra cash flow to finish off the year and to go into January a bit more
confident. And we only lost 4 days, right? Only 4 days because we went into tier 4.
And considering that our pop-ups are normally only 14 days and this was going to be 21, you know, could be worse. So 4 days, yeah, could be worse. And it was a good score. So we managed to have 2, which is even better.
What's been, and this is to both of you, what do you think, I mean, I can think of many moments of, you know, head in hands, why am I here? Oh my God, what are we dealing with? Let's talk a little bit about that, because I think, you know, it's been so great in so many areas, but it's been tough. What are some of those moments when you were like, oh my God, I don't know if I can overcome this challenge. Like, is this really happening? Tell me about those, because I think sometimes they can be kind of funny to look back on and it's like, oh my God, it felt like the end of the world.
I mean, one I can think of quite clearly, I can feel it, was when we made what we thought was a great decision in October to postpone our pop-up store, because, you know, restrictions were pretty tight and that it was half term and there was talk of circuit breaker. So we postponed to open on November 3rd or 4th, only to then find out that we could have a 1-day pop-up store and that we were going to be the entire month of November. I definitely remember head in hands there, genuinely thinking, could this get any worse? So that's definitely up there. I mean, probably along with the fact that in March, when we were told we were going to be in lockdown for at least, what was it, the first time, 3 weeks, but we all knew it was going to be at least 6. That, knowing that I was going to have to give up the locations that I'd worked so hard to get, that hurt. Those are probably 2 of the worst ones that I can think
definitely.
Of.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a lot of like the lockdown announcements. Like, because in March it was just that unknown, right? It was the, oh, what is going to happen? And then these last 2, why they keep doing... I mean, I know what it's just how it works. They keep announcing it on a Saturday, and both Saturdays, this last one when they announced tier 4 and then one in November, were ones where it was just like, it's the beginning of the weekend. You're like, okay, you know something's coming, but you're just like, you know, you just don't think it'll be that day. And then you wake up Saturday morning and you're ready for the weekend and it hits. And it's just like, the world turns upside down. Let's replan everything. figure out
what
we're doing.
It's crazy. And what about some of the highlights? What's been your favorite? If you could choose one moment over the past year, which is probably not that difficult. What's a favorite moment or something that was like, yes, we beat this. It's working. We're gonna be okay. This is good.
The press in the summer. I mean, wow, that was a great couple of weeks in June, where we were. We had the Sunday Times. We had the Evening Standard. We had, gosh, I mean, it's many. I believe it was close to 15 really amazing pieces of press attention. That was a real highlight. To be noticed for the fact that we had taken what most people would consider a complete thwarting of our business, and we'd still managed to bounce back and get out there with multiple window activations. You know, that was an amazing sense of pride and recognition.
Definitely. What we call digital doyens defying the odds. I love that title.
Oh, yeah.
Can't really think of one specific moment, but I think it's been the general, because we have worked so hard to be agile and, you know, figure out how to navigate these last 6 months. And I think there has been a lot of general recognition from our community, through both, you know, the press and the feedback we've had talking to designers and other community members. And then also obviously winning the Fashion District Award. That was a massive high. So we won the Fashion District Retail Innovation Award. That was huge, because I feel like that, and then obviously there's been a couple of accelerators we've been a part of this year. And I think that recognition of, yes, we're pushing hard, we're pushing the boundaries, we're changing retail has been really, really one of the high points of this year.
Yeah, my gosh, that Fashion District moment was amazing, wasn't it, Rebecca?
Yeah.
I don't think I've heard higher pitched screams from two individuals in my life.
Yeah, that was a really good day. It's been a really tough year, but I think on the whole, I mean, okay, so say someone said to you, would you like to go back to the beginning of the year and start over without a pandemic, or would you rather be where you were now and continue?
Oh, that's a great question. My first instinct is to say no, because I think we've learned so much. I think our original plan for this year was great. Yeah, I mean, I think we could be far. I mean, personally, just because I think we've learned so much about ourselves as a business and our agility, and we found new opportunities, like whether that be the window activations or whether that be LVC Studios, which is our new, you know, like content creation that we started doing. Like, I don't think we would have done that, which is a whole new aspect of our community, if it weren't for this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, like, for me, the big thing is, you know, we knew that, or we've always known that our model is the future, and that we're, you know, we're revolutionizing retail and we're creating a better way to shop and a better way for brands and customers to meet. You know, as you said before, 5 years now squeezed into like less than a year. And I think for us, actually, in the long run, although it's been hard and tough, it's put us further at the forefront. And now we've got this incredible opportunity to really help brands and help customers and come out of the pandemic and emerge at the forefront of retail and the forefront of changing not only the high street, but, you know, on the whole, how we consume, how we shop, and how we, the relationship that people have with their purchases, which, you know, is so exciting, thinking that next year, or, you know, probably towards the end, there's, you know, going to be this retail renaissance. And I've said it now on a recorded podcast, so I really hope it happens, because if it doesn't, I'm really silly.
It will. We're seeing it already. I was going to say, we can see, you know, it's obviously, it's quite shocking, but I think we're seeing it now on the high street, even, you know, with the closures that have happened in the last couple of months. I mean, Arcadia, Debenhams, like, you know, these are the things that people have said are coming as the changes happen, but this has just accelerated it, which is obviously shocking. But I think it's just further affirmed what we're doing. Yeah.
What are you guys thinking for next year? You know, what have you learned? I mean, you've both said there've been so many learnings, and so much reflection on this year, and so much that we can use now to go into next year. What are your key learnings that you want to take forward into next year? And what do you think the climate will look like for brands and shoppers and retail next year?
I feel like it's going to be a pretty good one for independence, but also for our form of retail. I think, you know, short-term experiential retail, you know, yes, it has been creeping up. Not everyone has understood it still. But I think after this year, there should be a really strong place for pop-up. And I think with that, you know, if that means that we can really dominate that space, it means us being able to support more and more independent brands as we grow. So I'd hope to see that. I'd also, you know, the fact that we are currently activating, I believe, 12 units, if not more, at the moment. Hopefully that continues and LDC just pops up everywhere, and we actually get to expand our reach, probably predominantly across the UK to begin with, but as soon as possible, we can get further afield, as soon as all is safe and well. But I would really hope to see that sort of growth of our alternative form of retail and that sort of awareness of independent brands.
I think that'll just continue in terms of people focusing on local and getting to know what's behind their products. And I think on the digital side, this year for me has, you know, like we said, it's accelerated a lot of things. I think it's also highlighted for me where our particular pain points are and what we need to do to grow even quicker next year. And, you know, it's given us lots of new ideas of further ways digitally we can introduce our community with the brands and designers we work with and foster that intimate connection and ways we can bring that digital. Because I think even though next year, I think people will be, you know, bursting to kind of, as soon as we can safely get out of our homes and get back to physical shopping, which I think it, again, this has just reaffirmed the importance of that. I think it also at the same time has showed everyone you've got to have that digital foundation, because this, in cases like this, I don't think this will be an isolated incident. I think it's just, we are living in a digital world. And there are going to be times where we're so reliant on digital that, you know, it's our only point of connection. And it's kind of integrate that into people's lifestyles in a way, like I was mentioning with the new technology that's kind of come to light, that's been around for years. Just really learning how to integrate it into their life. And I think that's going to be further. I mean, and then like a small example of that is that I, you know, highlight of this year is that people now know what QR codes are and how to scan them. Thanks to Track and Trace or like whatever. And, you know, thanks to this, people no longer, you know, even, you know, my grandma knows what a QR code is, kind of thing. So which we use on, you know, our window activation. So I think it's accelerated things like that and brought to light these technology that, you know, are now going to be integrated into everyday lives, versus before they were around, but weren't integrated quite yet.
Yeah, I think that's, I completely agree. And Alice, what would you say to people that say physical retail in the high street is dead?
Gosh, they're wrong. They're definitely wrong. I think physical retail and the high street as we knew it is a memory. And I don't think it will ever be the same again. And I think that was changing way before COVID happened. COVID's just accelerated that slightly. And like Catherine said earlier, we all knew some of these giants were going to fall. It's just happened a little bit quicker than they probably would have liked it to. But I think, like I said, I think there will be more about experimenting with different types of retail. So whether that's pop-up or that's, you know, purely digital shop fronts, or it's robots, I don't know, or AI. I think the high street will never look the same again, but I think the high street, or just from talking to different landlords and agents, there is an emphasis now to bring back independence. And I think we are going to see more and more high streets becoming less of like a repetitive. At the moment, pretty much every high street across London, or probably across the UK, has the same 20 shops. And they're always there. I think that will change. I think we'll start to see more unique personalities come to life in different communities, which is obviously a great opportunity for us, but also our brands. But I think the fact that we've just had a very successful few weeks in a pop-up store in the middle of a pandemic proves that there's very much still a space for it, as long as you make it exciting and creative. And I think something we have been working on a lot and will continue to do so is how we can really make, you know, omni-channel retail and blur those lines between the digital and the physical. I think the more that we can do that, that will be the future of the high street. It's never going away, but it will never look the same.
I completely agree, and I think that's a really nice way to sum up. And I guess, like, I think one of the things I'm really excited about or looking forward to is, you know, post-pandemic, when I think there's going to be a renowned sense of appreciation and gratitude for, you know, as humans, how social, not only just that we are social creatures and we you know, physical has a place in our future and it is so important to us, for our mental health and our well-being and just because of who we are, but also an appreciation for, you know, experience and entertainment and wanting to go out and wanting to be together. And, you know, I think it's really exciting to see what that's going to look like next year, because, you know, you're both right. There is a huge rebirth that we're undergoing. But as we do emerge next year, this gratitude, this appreciation, we've all seen the sense of authenticity, of human, you know, real people coming to the forefront of how we communicate as brands and customers. And I think that's going to be really exciting as we start to reimagine what the high street looks like, focusing on authenticity, entertainment, experience, and storytelling.
Essentially, it will look like what you see.
Yes, well, let's hope so. Cool. Well, look, guys, it's been such a great conversation. I feel like I've learned so much as well, and I really enjoyed this. I feel like this is such a great way to introduce the company. And hopefully to everyone listening, you've been able to go a little deeper now into our story, why we're here, and our mission. And I'm really glad that, you know, I've been able to have Alice, our COO, and Catherine, our head of digital, and hopefully gives everyone a really, a good understanding of what we stand for and what we're looking forward to, and sets a really good tone for the podcast series. We'll be bringing our designers into the podcast. Each episode will focus on one designer and sharing their stories, their mission, and their values, and talking a lot about why they started, what their mission is. So do stay tuned. Do give us a little follow. Check us out online. We've got some amazing brands. And hopefully, we'll see you at the next episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you.